Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's Tuesday, August 25th, 2015, in Washington. Those revolving doors are spinning faster than ever before. It's the Studio Phenoms, the Gorillas with a Z. And the song is called Revolving Doors. And boy, are they spinning like you wouldn't believe in Washington these days. Item, Eric Holder, the attorney general who resigned, retired, and had to wait for his replacement to be sworn in, has returned to the Juice Law Firm where he worked before he was named attorney general. And he spent, what, about 10 years at Covington and Burling while the Republicans were in power. After, of course, he had served in the Justice Department under President Clinton and famously helped him make the decision about the Mark Rich pardon at the end of Clinton's term. And they wanted Eric Holder back at Covington and Burling so badly that they had an empty corner office reserved for him for the last couple of years. And is it a coincidence that Eric Holder managed the Justice Department in a way that favored the clients of Covington and Burling? Because that firm specializes in defending white-collar criminals. And their clients include the biggest banks in the United States, the same banks that paid hefty fines but saw no individuals indicted for wrongdoing around the clear fraud that led to the financial meltdown in 2008. And even those who cooked the books on the toxic mortgages walked away scot-free. And when you compare it to the savings and loan scandal of the 1980s, which was 10% or less in scale compared to the massive financial meltdown of 2008, and the trillions of dollars that our government pumped into the private banks to shore them up. All that got a pass from looking forward, not backward, Eric Holder as Attorney General. And so, this is not so unusual, but it is still highly problematic. Holder took his chief of staff from the Justice Department back to the law firm with him. And at the firm, oh gosh, there are so many well-connected former government officials, they brag about it on the website. Our team includes former senior SEC officials, a former Secretary of Homeland Security, three former heads of the Justice Department's Criminal Division, former federal judges, numerous former federal prosecutors with extensive criminal trial experience, as well as former senior Treasury, State, and European Union officials. And the firm doesn't name its current clients, but, gosh, we know it's represented Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and is currently registered as a lobbyist for Wells Fargo. So Covington and Burling is the juice firm where the bankers go to buy influence. And they get a great return on their investment. Take Lanny Brewer. He is now the vice chairman of Covington and Burling. He was one of Holder's deputies in charge of financial fraud prosecution at the Obama Justice Department. There were no financial fraud prosecutions of a significant nature. And so a guy named Kaufman, I've got to look up his first name here earlier in the article. I think it's Bruce Kaufman. He was a U.S. senator. He took the place of Joe Biden. He was a Biden staffer when Biden became vice president. And Kaufman, Ted Kaufman, pardon me, I called him Bruce. Ted Kaufman says that the cozy relationship between the AG's office and corporate law firms is shocking, but they manage it in ways that appear to skirt the law without quite violating it. And another activist who promotes good government said, What's shocking in Washington isn't what's illegal, but the sort of stuff that's legal. Are we going to operate under the assumption that attorneys at DOJ who are leaving for high-paying jobs in the private sector aren't going to be influenced by their financial connections? It's absurd to try to make that case. And here's a quote from Lanny Brewer in 2012. He said that these decisions sometimes kept him up at night. Quote, in reaching every charging decision, we must take into account the effect of an indictment on innocent employees and shareholders. Those are the kinds of considerations in white-collar crime cases that literally keep me up at night. What, worried about whether Jamie Dimon is going to steal money from shareholders to pay fines for his bad judgment or criminal behavior? And when they talk about innocent shareholders, they're the ones who have paid the price for the wrongdoing of white-collar criminals in the last 10 years. The shareholders pay these massive fines to the government, not Jamie Dimon. And here's a quote from Holder himself. In an interview with the Financial Times after he left the Department of Justice, Holder defended his decision not to seek high-level criminal prosecutions, arguing that large financial settlements were preferable to trying to make examples of people. But he doesn't mind making an example of Ed Snowden or Chelsea Manning or Tom Drake. It really is shameful. And Eric Holder, of course, presided over the massive surveillance and the use of state secrets privilege to defend against any legal challenges. We'll get to that in a moment. But there's another guy who ran for the revolving door. Four-star General Ray Odierno resigned from his position, or actually retired, as U.S. Army Chief of Staff on a Friday. Less than a week later, he's cashing in, taking a job as a senior advisor at J.P. Morgan Chase. Jamie Dimon is proud to have him in their war room. He has joined the company in a senior advisory capacity, providing strategic advice and global insights. He will represent J.P. Morgan Chase through engagement with clients, government officials, and policymakers in the U.S. and internationally. Now, General Odierno is not just, you know, going to win the right to install ATMs on military bases or stuff like that. This is trading favors and influence at the highest levels. And I want to thank our listener Carl Howard for tipping me off to the Odierno trip through the revolving door. He's the guy who helped preside over the failed surge. He still maintains that invading Iraq was the right thing to do. And would you want a guy with that kind of judgment serving as a strategic advisor to your bank? And, of course, he joins the disgraced former CIA chief and general David Petraeus in the banking sector. Petraeus, of course, in a high-paying job now at Kohlberg, Kravis & Roberts, KKR, and he surfaced in our recent coverage of the State Department's influence over Mexico and KKR's dabbling in the rights for fracking and other extraction methods. And here's one more guy who went through the revolving door and is making $60,000 a month from a single account. Now just think about that. Have you ever made $60,000 in 1 month? And have you ever done that for a year? Every month make $60,000 from one client? Well, that's what Norm Coleman, who served a single term as senator from Minnesota. He's a Republican, and he's now a registered lobbyist for Saudi Arabia. He works at the juice firm Hogan Lovells, and he gets that $60,000 a month. Plus, they recently gave him a $6 million budget for advertising behind a group called American Security Initiative that is running TV ads opposing the nuclear deal with Iran. Now, this is very interesting double talk because the Saudi government has officially taken the position that they support the nuclear deal with Iran. But they're paying Norm Coleman $60,000 a month. They gave him $6 million to try to kill the deal. Now, Norm Coleman's buddies on the American Security Initiative include former Senator Joe Lieberman, Do you remember that guy was Al Gore's vice presidential candidate in 2000? Also, Evan Bayh, the former Democratic senator from Indiana, who recently was whitewashing the CIA's investigation of itself over the Panetta review surfacing during the Senate Intelligence Committee's research on the torture programs. And then there's good old Saxby Chambliss, the Georgia Republican who recently retired. He was a ranking member on the Intelligence Committee. And he works over at DLA Piper, another lobbying firm retained to influence U.S. policy on behalf of Saudi Arabia. Now, the one thing I'll say is that, unlike Israel, Saudi Arabia registers its people as foreign lobbyists. That's legal, in contrast to how AIPAC operates. That, of course, is the pro-Israel lobby in the United States. In an in-depth interview released to my subscribers today at peterbcollins.com, a great conversation with Rocky Anderson. As you know, he's the former mayor of Salt Lake City, and he earned my vote when he ran for president in 2012 on the Justice Party ticket. He is now a lawyer, or he's back at practicing law, and he has filed a class action lawsuit against the NSA and against George W. Bush and Dick Cheney personally, along with other respondents, accusing them of spying on everybody in Salt Lake City during the 2002 Olympic Winter Games. Here's an excerpt from my conversation with Rocky Anderson.
There is good evidence that the NSA and FBI joined together, and this was in the context of Bush's widespread illegal surveillance program, but where they identified a geographic area, basically placed a surveillance cone over that area, and scooped up the contents of everything they could. Mm-hmm. They got the contents of every email, of every text message in this area, and they also got all the metadata from every telephone call and from the source that we have who was in the NSA at the time. They also identified certain people or telephone numbers and recorded those telephone conversations. And it wasn't only in Salt Lake City now, we've recently learned. It was in the area of every Olympic venue.
Really?
So this was the most immense, indiscriminate surveillance by identifying a geographical area and without, of course, any particularized showing of suspicion, of course, without any warrant, and just coming in completely illegally and unconstitutionally and grabbing everything they could get from everyone in this area. And it wasn't just those who were in this area that was impacted. It was everybody from outside the area who engaged in any communications with people within this area.
As you just heard, Rocky Anderson is very concerned about the geographical dragnet surveillance that was imposed on the entire region around Salt Lake City in 2002, and there was no warrant, there was no probable cause, and many innocent people had their Fourth Amendment rights shredded by this action. And Rocky Anderson makes a number of great points in our in-depth interview. I invite you to listen to the full conversation. He notes that the whistleblowers, including the NSA whistleblowers who recently filed suit against the government for the retaliation that they experienced, we talked about this yesterday. But he also talks about how these efforts need to be opposed, and that by opening up the issues around 2002, he is also hoping that a court will order an injunction to prevent this kind of dragnet spying in the future. So there's a lot in this conversation with Rocky Anderson, and as you know, I have a great deal of respect for the work that he has done and that he's doing right now. And one of the things that was probably used in the dragnet surveillance, this cone of surveillance over Salt Lake City in 02, is what we call a stingray. Stingrays refer to a group of different high-tech boxes that can simulate a cell phone tower and they trick all local cell phones into checking in with the phony tower and disgorging information like not just your phone number, but the ID of the phone, passwords, contacts. They can read your email. They can listen to your voicemail. They can monitor your phone calls, depending on the level of the Stingray device and its sophistication. Well, we now know that the Baltimore Police Department has made widespread use of the device, and USA Today, an unusual place to see investigative reporting, found the Baltimore police have used the device in 837 cases, including serious crimes, but also many petty crimes involving credit card theft or harassing text messages. And none of this was based on a warrant issued by a judge. And in many cases, prosecutions go forward without prosecutors, judges, and defense attorneys being made aware that Stingray was used to unconstitutionally capture evidence against a suspect. No, the cops have a lot of dodges that they use. They claim it's like an old pen register phone tap. Or they file requests saying that they're using sophisticated electronic equipment. But they don't define exactly what that means. And in many cases, state laws don't require any disclosure. So this is operating in a huge loophole, a gray area. Last year in Tacoma, Washington, a report found that judges had no idea they were signing off on Stingray use, and it did lead the Washington State Legislature to pass a law this May requiring a greater amount of clarity. And that is the first such law in the country. We certainly need more action like that. And one critic, Christopher Segoyan, technologist at the ACLU, says there's no way to surgically use Stingray. The only way it works is like a shotgun shooting in all directions. So the concern is that this device and many law enforcement agencies don't tell courts or defense lawyers when using them. It short-circuits the democratic process and raises significant concerns about a fair trial. And I will continue talking about this because I think it's very important that people are aware of the tools that can be used against you and that you could just be in the vicinity of a criminal suspect and wind up having your privacy violated and exposed, and we have no idea how long the records from a Stingray intercept are retained. They tell us that they flush all of the innocent people's data away right away. Yeah, you believe that? Not so much. Every day I like to mention some of the people who support my work at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. I value each and every one of you. Gunnar Gunderson hails from the Middle East. That's where he's living these days. And he has two monthly subscriptions. Thanks, Gunnar. Nick Yaksich is a monthly subscriber. And so is Faith Peoples, not just once, but twice every month. I appreciate each and every one of you. And I need more people to sign up here at peterbcollins.com to keep the whole machine going. We've invested quite a bit in the upgrade that I announced yesterday. It'll be happening when I return from my three-week break. I'm leaving this Friday, and I'll be back with a fresh podcast on or about the 22nd of September. And at that time, we will have transitioned to a new setup at our website. It's called a theme, and it's going to be much more mobile-friendly. So if you generally listen on your phone or a tablet, this is going to be much more compatible with that and easier to use. And there are some other changes that we're making, including to what we call the RSS feeds. And if you don't know what an RSS feed is, don't worry about it, okay? Don't bother. But if you do know, we have to change the coordinates for the RSS feeds because we've been using a system by Yahoo called Pipes that they are shutting down at the end of September. So there will be a little confusion, a little change, a little transition, but it'll be happening in about 3 weeks, the week of September 21st. And if you have any problems, all you got to do is email me and we'll help you sort through it. But it's going to be an excellent upgrade. But it costs money to pay our web developer and buy tools and things like that. So I'm putting out a special appeal to you to join as a new subscriber today. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. The sign-up link is right under my picture. At the next page, you can choose the monthly 5, 10, 20, whatever fits your budget. You can make a one-time contribution of any amount. You can mail a check or money order if you don't like PayPal. The P.O. Box address is on that page. Or you can take out the $50 annual subscription, and new annual subscribers earn our bonus gift, a copy of Pepe Escobar's Empire of Chaos, the ebook edition. Well, speaking of chaos, things seem to be settling down a little bit between North and South Korea. And yesterday I led with the alarming news that 50 of North Korea's submarines, they have about 70 altogether, had disappeared from the South Korean radar, and they didn't know where they went. Well, the good news is that the truce, if you want to call it that, that was negotiated over the weekend appears to be holding, and they are de-escalating the standoff that began with a landmine that injured two South Koreans, then the retaliation with the loudspeaker propaganda from South Korea, and then the threats that came from the North. Well, what's interesting is that the report is that some 50 submarines that had been away from their bases since August 21st have shown signs of returning back to home base. And one tidbit that we learn is that these North Korean submarines are so rudimentary that they can only stay underwater for 3 days at a time. And they may be returning because there is the prediction of a potential typhoon nearing the Korean Peninsula. And I don't know how seaworthy these North Korean subs are. But I'm glad to see the tensions being reduced, and I hope that will continue. Spencer Ackerman has a great story in The Guardian today. I've linked to it in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And he does a really careful analysis of the remaining 116 prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the astounding discovery is that only three of those who remain at Guantanamo were actually captured by U.S. forces. The bulk of the population came from people who were turned in by Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence, the dreaded ISI. At least 30 of them were sold into bounty and turned over by Afghan warlords. And so when you look at this and you say, well, you know, we're told that the people at Gitmo are the worst of the worst. And with news that Defense Secretary Ashton Carter is examining the brig at Charleston, the prison at Fort Leavenworth, as places to transfer Guantanamo prisoners, we hear these shrill shouts from Pat Roberts, Senator of Kansas, and Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, saying, oh, these are the worst of the worst. We can't allow them on our soil. Well, these are prisons where no one has ever escaped. And so just having them inside a prison on your soil is some kind of a threat? I mean, it's not even rational. And then when you examine who these people really are, they're not the worst of the worst. Morris Davis, a courageous former prosecutor who's been on our podcast several times, he says that in his experience at Guantanamo, it didn't take him long to realize that for every serious detainee like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, there were dozens and dozens more that were of the knucklehead variety. Knuckleheads. Not the worst of the worst. We have a bunch of knuckleheads who we're holding without charge or trial indefinitely at a great cost to our credibility as a nation of laws. And idiots like Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire, a Republican, they keep parroting this worst of the worst stuff and pandering to people's fears. And she really shows clearly that she's ignorant. She does not know what she's talking about. Speaking of Guantanamo, our friend and colleague Andy Worthington is back from a vacation and has posted two important stories. One about, this is the headline, disgraceful U.S. Justice Department secretly blocks release of Guantanamo's gravely ill hunger striker Tariq Ba-Oda. And that is a travesty. And they're afraid that if they released him, it would set a bad example. and that others who want to protest their illegal incarceration might try to do the same thing. Andy also updates the failure to release Shaker Amer, as we reported a couple of weeks ago, based on the foot-dragging of Defense Secretary Ashton Carter. Well, in Ferguson, Missouri, they have finally addressed what I think is one of the underlying causes of the racial and class tensions in that town. And these issues are not limited to Ferguson, but it's been a flashpoint. And so I am very happy to hear that yesterday a judge has announced what amounts to amnesty on these warrants for things like a taillight out or a license plate violation, these petty violations that lead to fines. And then poverty becomes a crime when people can't pay these fines and end up being sent to jail. It's quite Dickensian or Darwinian, however you like to tag it. But the mayor said, our hope is we can go through and have people come, get right, get rid of the excess fines and fees. Now, the measures go beyond a state law that is set to take effect this Friday that limits the amount of money that municipalities can keep from the minor traffic offenses. What we saw is that Ferguson, with this predominantly white police department, was funding the city services by writing tickets mostly against African Americans and extracting money from poor people who don't have it. That's a hell of a way to run a government. On the backs of petty violators? So let's praise Judge Donald McCullen, who was appointed as the municipal judge in Ferguson in June, and he has called for withdrawing or essentially canceling all municipal warrants issued before December 31st of last year, amounting to about 10,000. So that's a model for fixes that we can introduce in other places. And finally today, the wildfires in California are subsiding. They're not completely out. We have some that are only 5 to 10% contained. Washington State is also battling a spate of wildfires, and our crews are really maxing out. And we've seen the military dispatch soldiers to fight fires in Washington State. And now I want to thank our friends from Down Under, because there is a contingent of firefighters from New Zealand and Australia who have arrived in Washington State. Actually, they were sent to Boise and will be coming into Washington from the eastern frontier. And they are being trained for using our equipment and communication systems and should be deployed on the fire lines very soon. A tip of the hat to our friends from Down Under for this help at a critical time. Thanks for joining me today for News and Comment, the free podcast you're invited to share with absolutely everyone. Please get started, put it up on Facebook, click the like button. Well, you know what to do, right? I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.